International Bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorneys. Shut up. Do not attempt to think or depression may occur. Stay in your home. Curfew is at 7 p.m. sharp after work. Anyone caught outside the gates of their subdivision sectors after curfew will be shot. Remain calm. Do not panic. Your neighborhood watch officer will be by to collect urine samples in the morning. Anyone caught interfering with the collection of urine samples will be shot. Stay in your home. Remain calm. The number one enemy of progress is questions. National security is more important than individual will. All sports broadcasts will proceed as normal. No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drugs prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now mandatory. Be happy! At last, everything is done for you.
Welcome. You are listening to the Freedom Ministry on RBN, and I am your host, Chris Switzer. If you were listening the last hour, we are definitely knee-deep in Chapter 4 of the book Pawns in the Game. I've shown you the downfall of Napoleon, how the international Jewish bankers used the war to finance their operations further and secure even tighter control over the people and resources of the host nations they control and seek out. We're reading on from page 66 of the PDF copy of William Guy Carr's book, Pawns in the Game, published in 1958. The true picture of their utter ruthlessness, the international bankers, that is seen when it is pointed out that Stalin, a Gentile, was chosen by the international moneylenders and that, acting on their instructions, he put Trotsky out of the way and proceeded to liquidate hundreds of thousands of Russian Jews in the purges which put him in power following Lenin's death. This should prove to sincere but misguided people everywhere that the international bankers and their carefully selected agents and friends don't consider the masses of people of any race, color, or creed as other than expendable pawns in the game. It is true that many Jews became communist and followers of Karl Marx, Moses Mordechai Levi. The name game. They changed their names, folks. They're Jews. They worked and fought to bring into being Karl Marx's published theories for an international of Soviet socialist republics. But they, like many Gentiles, were deceived. By the time Stalin was firmly seated in Moscow as the head agent of the international bankers, it was difficult to find any members of the first and second internationals alive. The manner in which the art conspirators used Grand Orient Masons and then had them liquidated as soon as they had served their purpose is just another illustration of the ruthlessness of those whose only god is Satan. Further evidence will be produced to prove that the international bankers are not interested in anything else other than obtaining for their own small and very select group ultimate and undisputed control of the wealth, natural resources, and manpower of the entire world. The only honest thought in any of their minds is that they obviously believe that they are so superior in mental ability to the rest of mankind that they're better able than any other group of individuals to manage the world's affairs. They are convinced that they can work out a plan of world government that is better than God's plan. For this reason, they are determined to ultimately obliterate from the minds of all human beings all knowledge of God and of his commandments, and substitute their own new order based on the theory that the state is supreme in all things, and that the head of the state is therefore God, God Almighty upon this earth. The attempted deification of Stalin is proof of this statement. Once people become convinced of this great truth, they will realize that men of all races, colors, and creeds have been used and are still being used as pawns in the game. And that brings us to chapter 5, folks. The monetary manipulation. When the Rothschilds obtained control of the Bank of England, following Nathan's spectacular financial killing in 1815, he and his associates insisted that gold be made only the base for the issuance of paper money. In 1870, the European bankers experienced a little annoyance in their control system due to the fact that in America, a considerable amount of silver coin was being used. The European bankers decided that silver must be demonetized in the United States. At that time, England had much gold and very little silver. America had much silver and very little gold. The bankers on both sides of the Atlantic knew that while this difference continued, they could not obtain absolute control of the economy of the nation, and absolute control is essential for the success of big-scale manipulation. The European international bankers sent Ernest Said over to America and placed at his disposal in American banks $500,000 with which to bribe key members of the American legislature. In 1873, at the instigation of the bankers, their agents introduced a bill, innocently named a bill to reform coinage and mint laws. It was cleverly drafted. Many pages of writing concealed the real purpose behind the bill. The bill was sponsored by none other than Senator John Sherman, whose letter to the House of Rothschild has already been referred to. Sherman was supported by Congressman Samuel Hooper. After Senator Sherman gave a very plausible but misleading report regarding the purpose of the bill, it was passed without a dissenting vote. 3 years passed before the full import of the bill began to be realized. It was camouflaged. It was a camouflaged bill to demonetize silver. President Grant signed the bill without reading the contents after he had been assured it was just a routine matter necessary to make some desirable reforms in the coinage and monetary laws. According to the congressional record, none but the members of the committee which introduced the bill understood its meaning. The international bankers considered the passage of the bill so essential to their plans to obtain absolute control of the monetary system of the United States that Ernest Said was instructed to represent himself as an expert on coining of money. After organizing the formation of a committee favorable to his master's objectives, he sat in with the committee in a professional advisory capacity and helped draft the bill in accordance with the Rothschilds' instructions. Congressman Samuel Hooper introduced the bill in the House on April 9, 1872. He is recorded as saying, quote, "Mr. Ernest Said of London, a distinguished writer, has given great attention to the subject of mints and coinage. After examining the first draft of the bill, he furnished many valuable suggestions which have been incorporated in the bill," end quote. As if he didn't draft it wholesale himself, at the behest of his masters, Rothschild. Mr. John R. Elsom, in his book, Lightning Over the Treasury Building, on page 49, declares, according to his, Said's, own statement, made to his friend, Mr. Frederick A. Luckenbach, of Denver, Colorado, who has, under oath, given us the story, Saeed said, quote, I saw the committee of the House and Senate and paid the money and stayed in America until I knew the measure was safe, end quote. In 1878, a further withdrawal of currency and restricting of credits caused 10,478 businesses and banking failures in the United States. In 1879, the issuance of more coin at the insistence of Congress halted the artificially created recession and reduced business failures to 6,658. But in 1882, the secret power behind international affairs issued orders that there was to be no more pussyfooting. They reminded their banking associates in the states that sentiment has no place in business. These admonishments, produced results as spectacular as they were drastic. Between 1882 and 1887, the per capita money in circulation in the United States was reduced to $6.67. This action increased the total business failures from 1878 to 1892 to 148,703, while proportionate foreclosures were made on farms and private dwellings. Only the bankers and their agents who made the loans and took foreclosure proceedings benefited. It would appear that the international bankers were deliberately creating conditions of poverty and despair in the United States in order to produce conditions which would enable their instrument for the World Revolutionary Party to recruit revolutionary forces. This accusation is supported by a letter issued to all American bankers by the American Bankers Association. It has been proved that this association was intimately affiliated with Rothschild's European monopoly, if not actually controlled by the House of Rothschild at that time. The letter reads, March 11th, 1893. Dear Sir, the interests of the national banks require immediate financial legislation by Congress. Silver certificates and treasury notes must be retired, and national bank notes, upon a gold basis, made the only money. This will require the authorization of new bonds in the amount of $500 million to $1 billion as the basis of circulation. You will at once retire one-third of your circulation and will call only one-half of your loans. Be careful to create a money stringency among your patrons, especially among influential businessmen. The life of national banks, as fixed and safe investments, depends upon immediate action, as there is an increasing sentiment in favor of government legal tender and silver coinage. End quote. This command was obeyed immediately, and the panic of 1893 was created. William Jennings Bryan tried to counteract the bankers' conspiracy, but once again the public believed the false accusations circulated in the press by the bankers' propagandists. The man in the street blamed the government. The American citizen never even suspected the part the bankers had played in creating chaos in order to feather their own nests. Excuse me. William Jennings Bryan was unable to do anything constructive. His voice, like the voices of many other honest and loyal citizens, was a voice crying in the wilderness. In 1899, J.P. Morgan and Anthony Drexel went to England to attend the International Bankers Convention. When they returned, J.P. Morgan had been appointed head representative for the Rothschilds' interest in the United States. He was probably chosen as top man because of the ingenuity he had shown when he made a fortune selling his government Union Army rifles, which had already been condemned. As the result of the London conference, J.P. Morgan and Company of New York, Drexel and Company of Philadelphia, Grenfell and Company of London, Morgan Hargis and Company of Paris, M.M. Warburgs of Germany, and Amsterdam and the House of Rothschild were all affiliated. The Morgan-Drexel combination organized the Northern Securities Corporation in 1901 for the purpose of putting the Hines-Morse Group out of business. The Hines-Morse controlled considerable banking, shipping, steel, and other industries. They had to be put out of business so the Morgan-Drexel combination could control the forthcoming federal election. And we do have our first caller holding, Kathleen in Texas on line one. Hello.
Hey, Chris. I hate to interrupt you, so I'll make it very quick. I'm enjoying this so much. Last week I did tell you about my mother had gotten a book at the junk store, which was about 50-some years ago, but it was already about 50 years old, and it was called The Player Queen, and mm-hmm. it was so enlightening about Aunt Marie Antoinette. We all think of her as, you know, let them eat cake, but it turns, and I forgot to tell you this last time, well, she and the whole court were incredible gamblers. So the player queen. Mm. So that's the money lenders were loaning her money because of her gambling. And
yes.
So anyway, that's one thing. And then about the Masons, I remember my father. It was clear that I don't know what was said, but maybe someone asked him to join the Masons, and you know. He wouldn't do it, and that's when I learned that was something that Catholics didn't do. And then in 1958, around in there, so I can't tell you exactly the date, but all of the parishes, Catholic parishes within the San Francisco Bay Area, they all each parish put buses together. And all of the parishioners got on the buses. This is from all over the Bay Area. And they had rented, the Archbishop had rented a huge valley in Golden Gate Park. And and we were all going there to say the rosary because of the UN coming to America. So I don't know what the exact date was that the UN came to the United States, but they were all saying the whole purpose of the rosary was that this was an abomination.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell you the exact date, but I thought you might be interested in that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, and I really enjoy the book. Just tell me how to spell the author's name again.
Sure. It is William, traditional spelling, Guy, G-U-Y, Carr, spelled C-A-R-R typically, but I've seen it spelled both ways. With
okay,
one
perfect. And 1958. Okay, great. And thank you so much. Yes. I enjoy your show. It's a horror show, but it's wonderful.
Thank you. I appreciate you calling, Kathleen, and listening.
Okay, thank you.
God bless you.
You too.
Yeah, after Vatican II, the international moneylenders pretty much secured the Vatican as well. But in 1948, we have the formation of Israel. The United Nations, of course, supporting it, and America joining in. And today, you see what you see. They continue to squeeze. And as Benjamin Netanyahu said, the former Prime Minister of Israel, multiple times after 9/11, that he would use America as a welfare state until it could give no more. And then it would just poof, blow away like dust in the wind. And that's it, folks. We'll be right back after the break. Don't go anywhere.
Use only the drug prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question! The comfort you've demanded is now mandated.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorneys. Shut up.
Welcome back. You are still listening to the Freedom Ministry on RBN. I'm still your host, Chris Switzer. For the break, we were reading from the book Pawns in the Game by William Guy Carr, a Canadian Navy man who was very clued in to the machinations of this secret cabal and the international Jewish bankers. And we're reading from page 70 now of the digital copy of the book. The Morgan-Drexel combination organized the Northern Securities Corporation in 1901 for the purpose of putting the Hines-Morse Group out of business. The Hines-Morse controlled considerable banking, shipping, steel, and other industries. They had to be put out of business so the Morgan-Drexel combination could control the forthcoming federal election. For what, you ask? Well, the Morgan-Drexel combination succeeded in putting Theodore Roosevelt into office in 1901. This delayed the prosecution, which had been started against them by the Justice Department because of the alleged illegal methods used to rid themselves of competition. Morgan-Drexel then affiliated with Kuhn Loeb and Company. To test their combined strength, it was decided to stage another financial killing. They created the Wall Street Panic of 1907. The public reaction to such methods of legalized gangsterism was sufficient to make the government take action, but the evidence which follows clearly proves how the public was betrayed. The government appointed a National Monetary Commission. Senator Nelson Aldrich was appointed head of the commission. That's like appointing the fox head of the hen house. He was charged with the duty of making a thorough study of financial practices and then formulating banking and currency reforms by submitting the necessary legislation to Congress. Aldrich, it was discovered afterwards, was financially interested with the powerful rubber and tobacco trusts. He was just about the last man in the Senate who should have been entrusted with such a task. Immediately after his appointment, Aldrich picked a small group of trusted lieutenants, and they all departed for Europe. While in Europe, they were given every facility to study the way the international bankers controlled the economy of European countries. After Aldrich had spent 2 years and over $300,000 in 1907 money of the American taxpayers' money in Europe, Lai returned to the USA. All the public received for their money was to be told by Aldrich that he hadn't been able to arrive at any definite plan which would prevent recurring financial panics which had upset business, created unemployment, and destroyed many small fortunes in the United States since the Civil War. Aldrich was so close to the Rockefellers that J.D. Jr. married his daughter Abby. Prior to the tour of Europe, Aldrich had been advised to consult Paul Warburg. This Paul Moritz Warburg was a unique character. He had arrived in the United States as a German immigrant about 1902. It turned out afterward that he was a member of the European financial house of M.M. Warburg & Company of Hamburg and Amsterdam. This company was, as we have seen, with the House of Rothschild. Paul Warburg had studied international finance in Germany, France, Great Britain, Holland, and other countries before entering America as an immigrant. The USA proved to be his land of golden opportunity because, in no time at all, he purchased a partnership in Kuhn Loeb & Company of New York. He was voted a salary of $500,000 a year. One of his new partners was Jacob Schiff, who had previously purchased into the firm with Rothschild Gold. This Jacob Schiff is the man evidence will prove financed the terrorist movement in Russia from 1883 onwards to 1917 with the Bolshevik Revolution. Schiff hadn't done too badly for himself and his backers. He had managed to achieve undisputed control over the transportation, the communication systems, and the supply lines in the United States. As has been proved, control of these is absolutely essential for successful revolutionary effort in any country. On the night of November 22, 1910, a private railway coach was waiting at the Hoboken, New Jersey railway station. Senator Aldrich arrived with A. Piatt Andrews, a professional economist and treasury official who had been wined and dined in Europe. Shelton, Aldrich's private secretary, also turned up. He was followed by Frank Vanderlip, president of the National City Bank of New York. This bank represented the Rockefeller oil interest and the Kuhn Loeb railway interests. The directors of the National City Bank had been publicly charged with helping to foment a war between the United States and Spain in 1898. Regardless of the truth or otherwise of the charges, the fact remains that the National City Bank owned and controlled Cuba's sugar industry when the war ended. And with that, folks, we're going to our break. Please don't go anywhere. We have much to cover. Stay tuned.
Without permission, use only the drug prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you.
Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's one, Rad. Consistent results when used for heart problems. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious that if he hadn't made it to the hospital in time, he would have died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives, he tried Extendivite. While taking Extendivite, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorney. Shut up. Do not attempt.
Welcome back. You're still listening to the Freedom Ministry on RBN. I'm your host, Chris Switzer. We're reading from Pawns in the Game, published in 1958, written by William Guy Carr. And we are in Chapter 5, getting into the Federal Reserve Conspiracy, actually. And how it was created, how it came about. We're on page 71. Others who joined Aldrich were H.P. Davison, senior partner of J.P. Morgan & Company, Charles D. Norton, president of Morgan's First National Bank of New York. These last three had been accused in the American legislature of controlling the entire money and credit of the United States. Last to arrive in Hoboken for the train ride to Jekyll Island, Georgia, were Paul Warburg and Benjamin Strong. Warburg was so wealthy and powerful by this time that he is said to have inspired the famous comic strip, Orphan Annie, in which Warbucks is featured as the most wealthy and influential man in the world, a man who can, when he so wishes, use superhuman or supernatural powers to protect himself and his interests. Benjamin Strong came into prominence during the preliminary manipulations of high finance, which led to the Wall Street Panic of 1907. As one of J.P. Morgan's lieutenants, he had earned a reputation for carrying out orders without question and with ruthless efficiency. Aldrich's private coach was attached to the train. Newspaper reporters learned of this gathering of men who controlled America's oil, finances, communications, transportations, and heavy industries. They began to swarm down upon the private car like locusts, but they couldn't get anyone to speak. Mr. Vanderlip finally brushed off the reporters' demands for information with the explanation, quote, "We are going away for a quiet weekend," end quote. It took years to discover what happened on that quiet weekend. A secret meeting was held on Jekyll Island, Georgia. This hideaway was owned by J.P. Morgan and a small group of his financial affiliates. The business discussed at the meeting referred to was ways and means to ensure that proposed legislation to curb financial racketeering and monetary manipulation in the U.S. be sabotaged and legislation favorable to those attending the secret meeting be substituted. To achieve these two important objectives was no easy task. Mr. Paul Warburg was asked to suggest solutions. His advice was accepted. Subsequent meetings were held by the same group to iron out details in New York. The conspirators named their group the First Name Club because when meeting together, they always addressed each other by their first names to guard against strangers becoming interested should they hear the surnames of national and international financiers being spoken. To make a long story short, Aldrich, Warburg & Company drew up the monetary legislation, which Aldrich ultimately presented as the work of his special committee. He had it passed by Congress in 1913 under the title the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. The vast majority of American citizens honestly believed that this act protected their interest and placed the federal government in control of the nation's economy. Nothing is further from the truth. The Federal Reserve System placed the affiliated bankers in America and Europe in position to bring about and control World War I. This statement will be proved. World War I was fought to enable the international conspirators to bring about the Russian Revolution in 1917. These facts illustrate how history does repeat itself and why. By means of similar plots and intrigue, the international bankers had brought about the English Revolution in 1640 to 49 and the Great French Revolution of 1789. In 1914, the Federal Reserve System consisted of 12 banks, which had bought $134 million worth of Federal Reserve stock. According to congressional record of May 29, 1939, 8,896, they had made a profit of $23,141,456,197. In 1940, the assets at the Federal Reserve were shown as $5 billion. That's a hefty profit to sneak away on the secret black books, huh? All the while, the country just keeps ticking away that debt on the backs of the slave citizenry. In 1946, they were declared to be $45 billion. The bankers made $40 billion profit out of their transactions in World War II. The majority of citizens in the United States believe that the Federal Reserve System benefits the people of the nation as a whole. They think the Federal Reserve System protects the depositors' money by making bank failures an impossibility. They think that profits made by the Federal Reserve banks benefit the national treasury. They are wrong on all suppositions. What the majority of the people think is exactly what the Federal Reserve System was originally intended to accomplish. But the legislation drawn up on Jekyll Island, Georgia in 1910 and passed by the American Congress in 1913 did not benefit the people or the government of the United States. It benefited only the American bankers who were interlocked with the international bankers of Europe. The President of the United States nominates four of the men who are charged with the responsibility of operating the Federal Reserve System. They are paid $15,000 a year for their services. Congressional records will prove that the member bank shared illegally the profits made right from its inception. It wasn't until 1922 that the original act was amended so the bankers could take the profits legally. Regarding the delusion that the Federal Reserve System protects the people who deposit their money for safekeeping in American banks against possible bank failures, statistics show that since the Federal Reserve System came into operation in 1913, over 14,000 banks have failed, and many, many more from this date. Millions upon millions of the depositors' money were lost to the rightful owners. As money or wealth, generally speaking, is indestructible, somebody got what the others lost. That is what we term smart business today. And so it goes, folks. This brings us to Chapter 7, Events Preceding the Russian Revolution. The invasion of Russia in 1812 by Napoleon shook the Russian people to the core. Tsar Alexander I set about the task of organizing a recovery program. In the hope that he could bring about a united effort throughout the Russian Empire, he relaxed many of the restrictions which had been imposed on the Jews when they were confined to the Pale of Settlement in 1772. Special concessions were made to the artisans and professional classes. A determined effort was made to establish Jews in agriculture. Under Alexander I, they were given every encouragement to assimilate themselves into the Russian way of life. Nicholas I succeeded Alexander I in 1825. He was less inclined to favor the Jews because he viewed their rapid inroads into the Russian economy with alarm, and rightfully so. His government viewed with great displeasure the determination of the Jews to maintain their separate culture, language, and mode of dress, etc. In order to try to assimilate the Jews into the Russian society, Nicholas I in 1804 made it compulsory for all Jewish children to attend public school. Nicholas thought that if the young Jews could be convinced that they would be welcomed into the Russian society, it would go a long way to eliminate misunderstandings. His avowed purpose was to offset the one-sided story of religious persecution, which was drilled into their minds from early infancy. The net results of the Russian experiment didn't turn out as expected. Education for non-Jewish children was not compulsory. The Jews became the best educated segment in Russia. Alexander II followed Nicholas I to the throne of Russia in 1855. Benjamin Disraeli referred to Alexander II as, quote, the most benevolent prince that ever ruled over Russia. Alexander devoted his life to improving the conditions of the peasants, poorer classes, and the Jews. In 1861, he emancipated 23 million serfs. This unfortunate class had been forced to work on the land. They were literally slaves. They could be transferred from one owner to another in all sales or leases of landed estates. Many Jews who had taken advantage of the compulsory education entered universities. They found themselves severely handicapped after graduation when seeking employment. To correct this injustice, Alexander II ruled that all Jewish graduates be allowed to settle and hold government positions in Greater Russia. In 1879, Jewish apothecaries, nurses, midwives, dentists, distillers, and skilled craftsmen were permitted to work and reside anywhere in Russia. But the Jewish revolutionary leaders were determined to continue their movement for popular world revolution. Communism, Bolshevism, no different today. Their terrorist groups committed one outrage after another. They worked to enlist the support of disgruntled Russian intellectuals and to plant the general idea of violent revolution in the minds of the industrial working population. In 1866, they made their first attempt on the life of Alexander II. They tried to murder him a second time in 1879. In some miraculous manner, both attempts failed. It was then decided a very special effort had to be made to remove Alexander. His benevolent rule was completely upsetting their claim, quote, that much-needed reforms can only be brought about speedily by revolutionary action, end quote. The conspirators hatched their next plot against the life of Alexander II in the home of the Jewess Hesha Helfman. The Tsar was murdered in 1881, while the revolutionary forces within Russia were trying to embarrass the government in every way possible and committing all kinds of outrages, including assassination. The secret powers behind the World Revolutionary Movement, from their headquarters in England, Switzerland, and the United States, were trying once again to involve Britain in war with Russia. In such a war, neither empire could make any appreciable gains. The final outcome of such a war would be to weaken both empires materially and leave them easier prey for revolutionary action afterward. That's why all these world wars are committed. That and other reasons, of course, but that is crucial. In the 19th century, October issue, 1881, Goldwin Smith, professor of modern history at Oxford University, wrote, quote, "When I was last in England, we were on the brink of war with Russia, which would have involved the whole empire. The Jewish interest throughout Europe, with the Jewish press of Vienna as its chief organ, was doing its utmost to push us in," end quote. The assassination of the Russians' little father in 1881, Alexander, of course, caused widespread resentment, which was expressed by a spontaneous outbreak of violence against the Jewish population in many parts of Russia. The Russian government passed the May Laws. These were harsh laws passed because the Russian officials who sponsored them argued that if the Jews could not be satisfied and reconciled by the benevolent policy of Alexander II, then it was obvious that they would be satisfied with nothing less than absolute domination of Russia, end quote. Once again, the whole Jewish race were being punished for the sins of a few self-appointed revolutionary leaders. On May 23, 1882, a Jewish delegation, headed by Baron Ginsburg, called on the new Tsar Alexander III and officially protested the May Laws. The Tsar promised a thorough investigation into the whole matter concerning the conflict between the Jewish and non-Jewish factions of the empire's population. On September 3rd, he issued this statement, quote, "For some time, the government has given its attention to the Jews and their problems and their relations to the rest of the inhabitants of the empire, with a view to ascertaining the sad conditions of the Christian population brought about by the conduct of the Jews in business matters. During the last 20 years, the Jews have not only possessed themselves of every trade and business in all its branches, but also of a great part of the land by buying or farming it. With few exceptions, they leave as a body devoted their attention not to enriching or benefiting the country, but to defrauding the Russian people by their wiles. Particularly have the poor inhabitants suffered, and this conduct has called forth protests from the people as manifested in acts of violence against the Jews. The government, while on one hand doing its best to put down these disturbances and to deliver the Jews from oppression and slaughter, on the other hand, thought it a matter of urgency and justice to adopt the stringent measures to put an end to oppression as practiced by the Jews on the other inhabitants, and to rid the country of their malpractices, which were, as is well known, the original cause of anti-Jewish agitations," end quote. The May Laws had been passed by the government not only as an act of resentment because of the assassination of Tsar Alexander II, but also because Russian economists had been urgently warning the government that the national economy was in danger of being ruined if measures were not taken to curb the illegal activities of the Jews. The economists pointed out that while the Jews only represented 4.2% of the whole population, then they had been able to entrench themselves so well in the Russian economy that the nation was faced with economic disaster. How correct the economists proved to be is shown by the action taken after Baron Ginsburg's deputation failed to have the May Laws rescinded. The international bankers imposed economic sanctions against the Russian Empire. They almost reduced the nation to bankruptcy. They exercised an embargo on Russian trade and commerce. In 1904, after they had involved the Russian Empire in a disastrous war with Japan, the English banking house of Rothschild repudiated its promise of financial aid and tried to render the Russian Empire bankrupt, while Kuhn Loeb and Company in New York extended to Japan all the credit it asked for. Encyclopedia Britannica, page 76, volume 2, 1947, says this of the May Laws. Quote, the Russian May Laws were the most conspicuous legislative monument achieved by modern anti-Semitism. Oy vey. Their immediate results were a ruinous commercial depression, which was felt all over the empire and which profoundly affected the national credit. Oh, we'll be right back after the break, folks. Don't go anywhere.
As normal. No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drug prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up. Be happy. Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorney. Shut up.
We are back. You're still listening to the Freedom Ministry on RBN. I am your host, Chris Switzer, and we're going to finish out the hour still reading from Pawns in the Game, 1958. The Russian minister was at his wit's end for money. Negotiations for a large loan were entered into with the House of Rothschild, and a preliminary contract was signed when the finance minister was informed that unless the persecution of the Jews were stopped, the great banking house would be compelled to withdraw from the contract. In this way, anti-Semitism, which had already so profoundly influenced the domestic policies of Europe, set its mark on the international relations of powers, for it was the urgent need of the Russian treasury, quite as much as the termination of Prince Bismarck's secret treaty of mutual neutrality, which brought about the Franco-Russian alliance, end quote. Many Orthodox Jews were worried because of the ruthless terrorism being practiced by their compatriots, by other Jews. They knew that a similar policy was being carried out in France, Germany, Spain, and Italy. The less radical Jews worried because they feared a continuation of such terrorism would result in such a wave of anti-Semitism that it could quite possibly end with the extermination of the Jewish race. Their worst fears were confirmed by a German Jew, Theodor Herzl, who informed them of Karl Ritter's anti-Semitic policy and warned them that it was rapidly being spread throughout Germany. He suggested the organization of a Jewish Back to Israel movement on the part of Orthodox Jews. This was the beginning of the Zionist movement. And folks, these Jewish terrorists firebombed their own people, their own Jewish ghettos and communities, and then blamed it on whoever the local boogeyman was in the area, be it anarchists or just people with bad attitudes. It didn't matter. Whoever it was, whoever the boogeyman of the area was, that's what the pamphlets and that's what the rabbis would say to their synagogue and their fellow Jewish compatriots, urging them, you must leave and go seek safety in Palestine. Or else, when all the while it was the Haganah militia, the Argonne, the Stern Gang, and all the Jewish military groups at the time who were doing this stuff to foment the new state in Palestine that they call Israel today, which was founded on terrorism and lies. And this, my friends, is why nobody should support such a state today. Nobody. It is literally a criminal haven for Jews. And they admit it themselves. It is a state for the Jews and no one else. Despite what any of the lesser parties will say about founding a two-state solution for the Arabs and the Palestinians, they treat them as dogs, just as they treat any non-Jew as dogs. Whether it's in America, whether it's in Germany, or Palestine, which they call Israel today. The international moneylenders, the bankers, are the ones behind it all, folks. Stay tuned, listening to RBN, and God bless you, America. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Go to God.
Use only the drug prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question! The comfort you've demanded is now
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening. listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.